you. And good luck. And viva Los Angeles. Bye-bye to you. And thanks to Summer and Sarah and Lainey, our staff here. I'm STD Noor. We'll be talking again next week. Bye-bye. We come and never pre-recorded with information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it.
You're listening to WORT Madison. Stay tuned for Mel and Floyd.
Don't take no prisoners if you can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot predict the outcome. Don't make donations where you cannot.
Good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Oh, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you. When I hold you in my arms.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. It's me, Mr. Smarty Pants. I have to tell you, something unfortunate happened to Mel. And and Saga and I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, so just absolutely so you know. Nothing.
So Saga's here with me today. But poor Mel. Mel, you know, he's been trying to get out there and get busy with the summertime here in Madison. And he was riding on his bike and he had a bike accident. And he's not mobile right now. So he was not able, he wasn't going to hobble down to the studio this week, but we might have him on the air, perhaps remotely, in the weeks to come. And if you're new to the show, this is your weekly roundup of current events, popular culture, and things you need to know. And normally, it's Mel and me, Mr. Smarty Pants. And I have to tell you, I'm nervous as a cat. I'm nervous as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs right now. I'm just kind of like, because I'm so used to working with, I mean, Mel, and I mean, we've been doing this since, I think, sometime around the time of the Hittite Empire or something. It's been a while. But I'm so happy that you're here today, Saga, because you've been on the show a couple times now, and I think this is going to be fun. So how you feeling?
I'm feeling like a cat, I suppose.
Another cat.
Two cats in one room full of rocking chairs.
That's an old Southernism I thought you might like. I just nervous as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
goodness gracious.
Goodness gracious, land sakes. So here we are. And so everybody, I want you to, whatever faith system that you happen to have, I want you to focus your happiness, all your powers of love and tenderness. You know, if you need to look at a picture of Elvis to get that going, whatever it is for you, I want you to focus those powers of love and happiness and healing on Mel, because he needs it right now.
So, amen.
Amen. Thank you very much. Hallelujah, sister. So what you been up to? You just came running in here. I'm so happy that you were available this week.
Yeah. We just wrapped up a show on a public affair talking to two activists in LA about the ongoing ICE raids there. So
sure.
if you want to hear some on-the-ground perspective, go back and catch that on the archives.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Yep. We have so many people that we know that listen to our show on the archives and that listen to it online on the various platforms out there. And if that's the way you get our programming, that's great. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to segue from that into, we did a wonderful job with the pledge drive last week. And our little show managed to, we had a pretty high barrier in terms of like what we were expected to raise. And you, the listeners, came through and we're so grateful for that. It was really great.
Thanks for showing up for us.
Yeah. And some folks were pledging from other places across the country. And, you know, the weirdest pledge we ever had, I don't know if you know this.
I don't know this.
We had a pledge once from Antarctica. I think it was somebody like with one of the UW Madison like science missions down there or something. And I was like, oh, goody, I think they're listening to the show to keep themselves from like, you know, killing each other. So that's usually what happens.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's so many things happening this weekend, Saga. Are you going to be involved in any of the stuff that's happening?
Oh my gosh, there's so much happening. I can't do it all, you know?
Yeah.
Tonight's the grand opening of the Atwood Music Hall.
Yes.
Yeah. Wart fundraiser. We've got a great lineup of bands. If you don't have tickets, you can get them online or at the door. I shouldn't say I also work for the Atwood. And for Wart.
Full disclosure.
Are you going to go?
No, I'm not, unfortunately. I am going to go because this is me. A companion and I are going to see the new Wes Anderson movie tonight because that's where we are. Any director that's as obsessive compulsive as that is speaking directly to my heart. So that's one of my favorites.
Kindred.
Exactly. Everything's so static. I love it. Static and post. And then tomorrow, there's going to be so much going on as well. It's going to be a little conflagration of things.
The No Kings events. Yep.
No Kings, but I got to tell you, here on the show, we're all about the Queens. So that's okay.
Yeah. Amen.
Amen. Hallelujah, brother. but No Kings, yeah.
No Kings.
Nope.
Yeah. Yep. And these events are happening. There are thousands of them, or at least over 1,000 across the country.
Right.
It's a real momentum growing.
So get your butts out there and do that thing. Yeah. And then tomorrow is also the Waterfront Festival, and there's going to be some WRT folks there, and that'll be during the day. Mm-hmm. So pop over there. They're at where the Yahara River comes into the Lake Sludge, whatever. What's the name of that lake?
Monona.
You know the story about Lake Monona, right?
I don't.
Like once, I got to give you all the local lore. Once a year, accidentally, the city of Monona discharges raw sewage into Monona. It's always an accident. It's amazing how punctually they have an accident every year where they discharge raw sewage into Lake Monona. But we love it.
We love it.
We love our surrounding city, our satellite cities. So what you been up to recently?
I think I had a worse week than Mel, perhaps. My parents were in town.
So what you're saying is physical pain is one thing. Psychic pain, that's a whole other story.
Yeah. Maybe we can compare our pain scale measurements another day.
Frowny face, really frowny face.
Yeah. So I got a story. So my parents come to visit. My dad brings me my grandmother's old sewing machine. So the highlight of the trip is getting this family heirloom I sew and I like to sew, and now I get to sew on my grandmother's machine. And I know it's my grandmother's machine because she etched her social security number into it.
So she wouldn't forget it?
I suppose the issue is if someone broke into her home and it was stolen, that it could be recovered. But I also, as I've been thinking about this all week, I also think that my Mima was such a generous woman.
Oh, very nice.
That if someone had stolen her sewing machine, that she was also giving them the opportunity to steal her identity.
Yeah.
And her excellent credit report.
Well, I'm just glad that she didn't carve, like many Meemaws from the Deep South, no Jews on it or something. So that's nice that she's just got her social security number on there. Any rate, well, enough about my family.
Yeah, so now I get to sew on her machine.
What kind of things do you sew?
I sew a lot of things, apparel, little home items. I do repairs on clothes. Yeah.
You are multi-talented.
I am.
Multifaceted, in fact, yeah.
Do you sew?
No. I don't do anything that requires coordination. Mm. So that's a problem for me. You know what I'm really good at? Arranging closets. I mean, if you need your closet arranged, I am there. I love putting everything in its place. That's the best I can say in terms of organization.
Okay, that makes sense of the Wes Anderson. Order. Totally.
It looks like it looks like a very nice closet when you watch those movies. Mm-hmm. I still remember my first joke, when I first realized I could be funny, was when I was around 10. And I always, of course, the reason for this was not my innate clumsiness. It was actually also needed glasses. But I was always getting hit in the face with the baseball. And I was, inevitably, I get hit in the face with the baseball. And so at one point I said, I wish they had a glove that you could put on your face because I'd be all set. And all the other boys laughed. And I thought, okay, that's the way to go.
And you were born.
And that was it. Yeah, there it was. But I mean, no, I don't do things that require much coordination. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of my general rule, so. But that's great. I'm glad that you're creative. I like to draw and things like that. Anything that requires just my hands doing something on a piece of paper or something, I can do that.
Yeah.
But any rate. So remind me again, how long have you lived up here in Madison?
A while now. Maybe it's coming up on a decade.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's home.
Yeah, that's good. How do your parents like Wisconsin?
They like the weather. They said it was pleasant. I suppose it's better than Texas at this point. So I'll tell you another story about my family.
Sure.
So I know that my grandmother was a sewist, but I learned recently that she was a professional sewist. She actually had a business.
Yeah.
And I know this because my dad, who is retired now, started digitizing her tax returns.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're speechless.
I am. I hope it's a whole new sort of vast subject matter about your family here. So your father's digitizing, is that his mother?
His mother.
Yeah, his mother's tax returns.
His mother's tax returns. Excellent. She's passed away like a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
And for some reason he needs the digital record of her employment.
For what purpose?
You know, that's a really good question.
Yeah. It's just completeness, I think, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. So what does your father do, if you don't mind me asking?
He's a retired person, so this is what he does now. He digitizes tax returns. I can give you his number if you need yours digitized.
No, I don't.
No, that's fine.
That's fine.
Oh, so he digitized them, and he found out in this process he'd never seen that she had this tax return from when she and her sister owned a sewing business in Texas. And so, you know, this strange skeleton in our family came out of the closet. They never disclosed that they owned a sewing business.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I'm thinking of all the wonderful Southern Gothic short stories I can write from this experience. I mean, the layers.
The layers.
Yeah. Yes, so just you wait.
It's a rich fabric.
It's a rich fabric.
Yeah. Oh,
so I don't know. I think I missed a lot of the news and this week getting swept up in the family stuff. So tell me what's going on.
Well, I have before me, as you see arrayed before me, many stories of things. These are what we call in the biz, the news nuggets. Which we try to parcel out the news nuggets through the show, right? You know, we just kind of provide some semblance of something of value. It doesn't really all add up, but yeah. So I always try. Do you know how I do this? I look at I look at the area. I never look at the headlines. I go the other direction. Like I never look at like what's the big stories because everybody's covering that.
Yeah.
I try to find stuff that's like a little weird or behind the scenes or structural or something like that. Mm-hmm. Some telling anecdote or something of that sort. So. But I don't know if I did that this week or not, so.
We'll find out.
Yeah. So what I did notice this week, that a lot of people are talking about, everyone's talking about, our little Kim Jong-un, our own little Kim Jong-un, President Trump. And one thing that you probably don't realize is behind the scenes right now, his vast platoons of lawyers are trying to short-circuit the convictions that he had.
You don't say.
Yeah, in state court. I know that's surprising to you. But, you know, he was convicted last spring of 34 felonies related to his attempts to cover up his sex scandals.
Mm-hmm.
And his lawyers are trying to get this moved into federal court. Can you guess why? Because he can pardon himself, probably. But they're trying to get it out of state court in New York. And so basically... all of his little minions now are trying to get the case moved. I don't know why. I don't know what authority under which they would do this, but that's what they're trying to do right now. So while everything's happening up here, it's always the three-ring circus when you have the circus. And he's Pennywise, the clown, right? He's running the whole thing. But one of the little circles is that they're trying right now to get these convictions. He wants to get them discharged in a way that would be favorable to him, of course, and puts them in the federal system, and that might actually work for him. So that's what he's up to. Meanwhile, Fulbright board, the people that decide who gets Fulbright scholarships, they've all resigned. They were just kind of like, okay, we're tired of you fussing around with these things. So the entire board that decides basically who's going to get these and what are the standards for it and how much they get and so on and so forth, they've been reviewing applications of about 1,200 scholars. And a lot of these scholars are from other countries because sure. It goes back and forth. And so the because of what's been going on and the stubby little hands of power have been getting in there. They've decided that they're not going to, they're just going to resign. So they're worried that the State Department in particular is going to be taking over the process. And wow. Marco Rubio, the guy who pretends to fall down so he can look like the fearless leader, that bad guy, he's going to be deciding. So you know it's going to be free and fair, you know.
And we're left with Marco Rubio.
Marco.
You know, I really feel for these folks who are in these positions, you know, resigning as a last ditch, like, you know, if they feel that there's really no movement that they can make in these positions, I mean, that's such a dire place in the brain drain that we're going to get with all these people leaving the federal government and other agencies. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the choice is between giving him what he wants and eating the dog turd of the Trump administration.
Yeah.
And they are like, we don't want to eat the dog turd, so, you know, so they quit.
When you put it like that.
It makes kind of sense then when you think about it. It's like, I can't do that. I'm sorry. I know it's bad for me to leave. I should stay here and fight. But really, you're going to make me do that, aren't you? It's basically like a hazing ritual for all these people right there.
Yeah.
So anyway. So what you've been looking at? I mean, you really literally have been out of touch with what's going on.
You know what I have been following is the House of Representatives vote on that Corporation for Public Broadcasting funding. Did you hear?
Of course.
Yeah, last night they pushed it through. It was a vote of 214 to 212.
Yeah.
I mean.
And what was the vote?
To end that funding.
Wow.
You know, there's already appropriated, and to claw it back. Yeah. So now it's not over. I mean, it goes to the Senate.
Sure. Yeah.
And then there's some technicalities around when that vote will happen and, you know, how many, it needs 50 votes to approve the president's rescission of that funding. But yeah, I mean, it's here.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's the thing. It's one thing for Trump to do all these things illegally, the whole, what they used to call back when Nixon was impeached, impoundment, where they just basically don't spend the money that's been appropriated by Congress. That was one of the articles of impeachment against Nixon, by the way.
Impoundment.
That he did that, yeah. So, but this is different. This is legislation. So, you know, this could be that, the end of it. So we've got staff of the NIH. There are more than 60 employees. Sign their names to a scathing letter. That's where we are these days. I signed a letter. I hope it scathes. that's the best we can do. I think that I really do believe the president is unscathable, actually, that at least at the moment. Their letter said, we dissent to I like this. We dissent to administration policies. Dissent to, which is an interesting formation.
Yeah, it is.
We dissent to administration policies that undermine the NIH mission, waste public resources, and harm the health of Americans and people across the globe. This is according to the scathing four-page letter. Many have raised these concerns to NIH leadership, yet we remain pressured to implement harmful measures. More dog turds. So
yeah, I also dissent to. Is that a legal formation? That kind of phrasing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah,
right. Do you write scathing letters?
I used to. Although, you know what I used to do back in the day? This is kind of sad. I used to write fawning letters because I would like to get the stationery. Like I wrote a letter to, God, who did I write to? I wrote to Queen Elizabeth one time. And I got a nice letter back from one of her ladies in waiting. You know, I've received the Queen's commands to thank you for your kind letter.
Wow.
Yeah, that was nice. I wrote a letter once to the Governor General of Canada. Basically, the letter said, now, what exactly is it that you do? And what was fun was their publicity office was like, whatever, send him a letter, you know. And they actually sent me a picture of the guy, too. I was just kind of like, all right, well, whatever he does, there he is. Let's see. Who else did I write to? I did write to one U.S. president, only one. I wrote to President Bush and asked for a picture, and I got one. So that was exciting. I didn't tell him what I did with it. But
what if our next letter writing campaign were just to get photos of it?
Yeah, it was. I don't know why. I just thought that would be fun to do. And Oh, who was another one? Oh, I wrote to the former queen of the Netherlands, too. I don't know she sent back her staff sent back a really nice, like it was embossed and everything with a little crown on it. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Wow.
I need stationery like that.
Wow.
So, no more kings, but remember, we're all about the queens.
We can love the queens.
Love the queens. Yas queens. Yes, thank you. Exactly. Exactement. Hey, the UN is pondering why birth rates have fallen. They're thinking about this. Now, do you know about the trend lines right now? They're figuring that the rate of increase in the world's population will start to, not the number, absolute numbers, but the rate of increase will start to go down about 2050. That's mm-hmm. based on if things continue in the way that they are in terms of economic expansion and women's ability to control their sexuality and mm-hmm. so on. So they're thinking that's, but it turns out it's coming a little faster than they thought. It turns out that people are not having children to the level that they have in the recent past, even in countries where it may surprise you. So Vietnam, for example, just abandoned its policy limits to two children. They mm-hmm. said, have as many kids as you want, because it turns out that they're having low birth rates there. And many people are saying people are contending that it has something to do with young people not wanting to have kids anymore. Because that makes sense. Why would you want to have a kid?
I don't.
There you go.
Makes sense to me.
Proof positive. That's the scientific method. There you go. There's your evidence, folks. But no, they said that's probably a fallacy. They're calling it the fertility fallacy.
Oh.
And they're thinking that what's really going on is that people are assuming or implying that fertility rates are a result of free choice. But as we know from here in the mm-hmm. United States, if you look at fertility rates going through the 20th century, the minute the Great Depression started, birth rates went down. And it's like, okay, wait a minute. People stopped wanting to have kids. They stopped having sex. What's going on? No. They basically were able to exercise enough control over their reproduction because they were worried about the results of having children. And so many people are in the UN study here are hypothesizing that what's really going on is economic conditions are such that people are very worried about having children. And that's a very different situation.
Yeah, I think that resonates with a lot of folks that I talk to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, a couple years ago, there was a big scare about men's fertility being down and that being a whole can of worms. So
yeah,
it feels like that narrative is shifting towards a more economic one.
Right. Yeah. No, there's always, this is like, there are always these panics, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you know, we need to have the First World War because men aren't manly enough. You know, it's like, no, we don't need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the thing at the time. People were just like, oh, it's a decadent civilization where people aren't, you know, so we need to have a war. That'll be the way we'll fix it. People really talked that way in the early 20th century. It's pretty frightening. But anyway. So, are you going to be at the No Kings?
I would if I could.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Okay. I've scheduled to work tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who do we have on the beat? Is there somebody there that's going to be interviewing people from WRT?
You know, I think some of our reporters will be there, and if you catch them, say hi. You know, we want to be responsive to the times, and you know, if you could listen to the local news on Monday, you'll hear a little bit of what we find.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, Mel and I once got press passes, and boy, did they regret that.
Really?
It was when, you know, the glorious boondoggle on the lake, right? You know, the convention center there. When that first opened, they were really, the city was so excited to get the word out that mm-hmm. they actually gave Mel and I press passes, and so we were broadcasting from the roof of the structure, mm-hmm. And we could tell who was listening to the show on their, back in those days, little portable radios, because we were saying things that were making people laugh. So, for example, at one point there was like the mayor was there and the county executive was there and all these different, you know, people who were involved. And he said, oh, it's another white guy in a tie. Proud, proud, very proud. And oh, hey, it's another white guy in a tie. Proud, proud, very proud. And you could see people sort of laughing. And then he's like, well, they're opening the doors. They're letting in the people. They're closing the doors. They're turning on the gas, which people in the audience were like waving at us, you know, on the roof. And I was just like, I'm sure the people at whatever, Downtown Madison Inc. or whatever it was, the agency that put that all together, were like really regretting that.
It's like a little bit of like a sports commentary meets convention center.
Exactly. Proud, proud, very proud. Hey, you'll be surprised by this. A new survey. This is one of those. I mean, it's good that we do this work because, you know, we all hypothesize and opinionate and so on, but they have a new study that proved the level of trust that self-declared Democrats and Republicans have for news sources, and finds that business-oriented publications like Forbes and the Wall Street Journal share an unusual distinction. They're the only two out of 30 news sources that sympathizers for both parties actually say they trust.
Really?
Isn't that weird?
Why do you think that is?
I would hypothesize it's like Thoreau. Thoreau said, "I'm not thrilled about business people, but they have to deal with reality." It's like, you know, and because you're trying to make investments and, you know, you want real return. And so you're not going to lie about everything, right?
I mean, I wonder, though, about conflicts of interest. Like, that would make me distrust.
Yeah, I know. That's where I am, too. Yeah. But I'm just trying to figure out what that might be. So this survey was released from the Pew people. Now, we like the Pew people. We trust them, the Pew Center.
The people?
The Pew people. The people. So they said it shows how how polarized they are with everything else. So 30 news sources were tested, and people said they were Republicans or leaned Republican were more likely to say they trusted 8 of them, and Democrats had more trust than distrust for 23 different sources. But the only ones that the two groups agreed on were Forbes and the Wall Street Journal. So here this will shock you, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But the two news sources tested that more than 3 in 10 Republicans said they were most likely to trust were Fox News and Joe Rogan.
Oh, no.
They should listen to our wank. It's like, if they trust that guy, they'll trust anything. Meanwhile, 13 of the sources had levels of trust of more than 30% among the Democrats. And, of course, you will not be surprised that the number one was PBS. We'll try to get rid of that. CNN, BBC, New York Times, Associated Press, and down the list.
Yeah.
So Joe Rogan apparently is considered a reliable news source.
Unbelievable.
He does interview people. I suppose that's positive, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but who you choose to interview isn't, you know, not without editorial decision making.
Right. It's not pulling the rabbit out of the hat. It's getting the rabbit in there in the first place. That's the trick.
Trapping that rabbit.
Getting the rabbit in there. Where did that rabbit come from? You had to put it in there sometime. At any rate.
Yeah. Will you make it to the No Kings?
Yeah, I'm going to be there. Mm-hmm. According to the police, the dear Madison police, they said safety is their foremost objective. Well, that's good to know. But the Madison police are getting ready for a busy day downtown. There are going to be protests, rallies, events, and, of course, the farmers market. So it's going to be...
There's something for everybody.
You know, as long as I've lived in Madison, there's at some point in the summer, I actually have this feeling like, okay, I'm living in an amusement park. It's like Madison Land, you know. And then you imagine people like you have it like Disney World where they have the big heads and things like that. It's like, oh, hi, I'm superannuated grad student. Or, hi, I'm radical lesbian or whatever. You know? And you're like, hold up, you know, I want to have my picture taken with radical lesbian. Of course you do.
Get in line.
When Companion and I went to Disney World, I thought I'd never want to have my picture taken with a licensed character. I mean, if I saw Goofy, I'd probably kick him first, you know, which they're probably used to. But I'd forgotten about Mary Poppins.
Oh.
And I have this umbrella that has a duck head, and Mary Poppins has an umbrella with a parrot head. And I thought, oh, that would be such a cool picture. So I was looking everywhere to try to find
Mary. You carried that umbrella everywhere?
Well, it was raining. That was what was great about going. If you want to go to some place like that, go when it's pouring rain. Mm-hmm. Because everybody else wimps out. And, of course, you know, the parents don't have to deal with the screaming kids and everything. It's especially bad. So if you want to go someplace like that where you know there's going to be a lot of crowds, go when it rains. It's great. So that's what we did.
That's a good tip.
Yep. Yeah, helpful hints for living. I mean, not so, but I know how to work the amusement park.
Hey, speaking of amusements, the Goodman Pool's opening soon.
Oh, hot damn.
I love the Goodman Pool.
Yeah.
Do you go?
No.
No, no. They have a slide.
That requires coordination. You missed the earlier part there. They have a slide.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I have a friend who lives in that neighborhood, so when we drive by, we just wave, you know. That's good enough for me. So what are some favorite things that you like about Madison that you do?
you know, I like biking around. It's a good place for that. Yep. I used to bike in Houston, and I don't know how I survived that. But here, it's good and easy.
Sure.
You know, and I like the pool. I like all the music. There's so many festivals over the summer.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't beat just being outside.
No.
Yeah. You get to get hot, you know.
Do you know what I don't like about Madison?
Please tell.
I don't like those jets.
Oh, I don't know. Who does?
You know, I have a friend that has... so I have this friend who... Mm-hmm. We have a two-person book club. Mm-hmm. It's the He-Man Book Club for Real Men. And
birth rates are up.
and so when I go over to his house, he lives over in the Eastern Eakin Park mm-hmm. area. Mm-hmm. And it is... I mean, it used to be bad with the old planes, the ones that used to fly over, right? But these F-35s are just... I mean, I know you hear everybody complaining about it, but it's ridiculous. You can't hear yourself think. Mm-hmm. And they're dogfighting, and I just keep waiting. I mean, we can see them from his back porch. We're sitting there. So we read Huck Finn, and then we're now reading James.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so that's... many people are doing that right now. So we're doing that. And so we're right about halfway through James. And so we're on the back porch. We're talking about the book and, you know, debating about this and that. And there's a lot in there to really talk about. And so we look up, and I see this jet make this, like, turn. And I'm thinking, is it dropping the payload right now?
Oh,
I mean, is
God.
That what's happening? Am I going to see Sterling Holloway coming out of the bottom of the... Yee-haw! You know, I mean, what's going on here?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, that's a... yeah, that's fine. It's a classic movie, if you ever... Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's not Sterling Holloway. Who is it?
Oh, it's... I can't think of names today.
Yeah, maybe I got the name wrong. That's my problem. Anyway, so just to quickly do this before mm-hmm. the break, I just want to mention that Representative Mark Pocan had asked the U.S. government if they could give us some money to insulate mm-hmm. some of those houses. Because mm-hmm. imagine you live there. That's going to drive you crazy. But imagine you're trying to sell your house. Who's going to want to come in?
The noise pollution there makes them uninhabitable.
Exactly. So they said, well, could we have some money to insulate?
Mm-hmm.
And the government said, yeah, well, guess what? No. Now it's no.
No. Now it's no.
As you might guess. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that about Madison either.
Yeah, that's my one...
those F-35s.
...thing I don't like.
Yeah. I also don't like Woodman's on a weekend.
take those F-35s and fly them over, and you're pretty fine. Well, we should do a little station break here, and this is the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show, and... Mel, unfortunately, is not on assignment, but he had a mishap. He did himself a mischief, as they say in England, and he's recuperating, but hopefully he'll be back in the next couple of weeks. And so I'm here with Saga, who has been stepping up to the plate in the last couple of weeks or so, and was here for the pledge drive and so on. And Saga, you're a volunteer. Are you paid or are you volunteer?
I am a part-time employee at
you're
the station.
You're a part-time employee here mm-hmm. at the station, and she's trying to stretch her oeuvre a little bit.
You betcha.
So... there we go. And and what should we say about... we normally talk about... we are on Spotify and... what
Spotify,
are we?
Apple Music.
Apple Music, if you like the pod version.
Also on the website, you can download it from WRTFM.org.
That's how I listen to it. Yeah. Sometimes if I think, well, that was a good show or that was a terrible show, I do actually listen to us just to get pointers, you know? So, like, ugh. I have the you know, vomit bucket right there and everything. So... not that I'm sensitive, but I do worry about these things. Anyway, so we'll be back in 2 or 3 minutes, and we're going to be playing some announcements. Take it away, announcements.
This just in. Award-winning WORT Community Radio is looking for a news director. His full-time salary position manages over 150 news volunteers and 2 part-time assistants in the production of 20 hours a week of on-air news, talk, and public affairs programming, including 3 daily programs, 12 weekly news, public affairs, and special interest programs, and several syndicated news programs. Great benefits include health, dental, vacation, a relaxed atmosphere, and the opportunity to make a difference in our community. WORT-FM is an equal opportunity employer. Persons from all underrepresented communities are strongly encouraged to apply. The application deadline is Friday, June 20th at midnight. For an application and further details, please go to WORTFM.org.
The 2025 Madison Jazz Festival celebrates 10 days of jazz from June 5th through June 15th. Presented by Arts and Literature Laboratory and Wisconsin Union Theater, Jazz Fest collaborates with Madison Music Collective, Madison Jazz Society, and venues around town for both free and ticketed events. Highlights include a series honoring the 60th anniversary of the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians, dedicated to opportunities for groundbreaking artists and nurturing original music, and performances by the all-women Original Pinettes Brass Band from New Orleans, saxophonist Isaiah Collier and the Chosen Few, pianist Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Ensemble, and Chicago's Ugochi and her African Soul Ensemble. The festival culminates in 2 full days of jazz on the Memorial Union Terrace with free concerts throughout the day on Saturday and Sunday. That's the Madison Jazz Festival, June 5th through the 15th, all across the city. Keeping things bopping and swinging, this is WORT Madison.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in homebrewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
And we're back. Ellen Floyd's Some Replacement Show. I got to say that during the break, 340 people called to say that it was Slim Pickens riding the bomb in Dr. Strangelove. And thank you, Mel and Floyd fanatics. We really appreciate it.
The fact checkers.
the fact checkers. I'm sorry, I claim to know everything, but remember, I only know the things that need to be known. No, Slim Pickens, that I oddly voiced stars from Days Gone By. Apparently that's what I was thinking of, Sterling Holloway. So he was riding the bomb in Dr. Strangelove, and hopefully we will never look up on the back porch of my friend's house and see him flying down on a missile.
I hope not.
Yeah, that's very much so. All right. Here's what we mentioned, cats at the beginning of the show. And this was another one where I thought I knew this already. Mm-hmm. It said that cats can actually tell who you are more by your smell than by what you look like. And there's researchers in Tokyo, center of cat science, by the way. They recruited 30 cats. I don't know what kind of incentive.
How do they recreate?
that is the verb that I stumbled onto in reading the story. They recruited 30 cats, and I'm like, okay, what was the incentive package? And to participate in the study, and the cats' owners captured their own scents by rubbing cotton swabs between their ears, between their toes, and under their armpits. So, and then 8 people who didn't own any pets were recruited to, because you have to have a control group, were odor donors. I have some family members that are really strong odor donors. We wish they'd keep their donations to themselves. Each of the study cats, in the comfort of their own home, was then presented with an array of test tubes. You know, cats love test tubes, containing the smelly cotton swabs from the owner, the stranger, and then the odor donor. And they had a camera, a secluded little camera, recording the cats' reactions to the test tubes. And the cat spent time sniffing the samples from the stranger than their owners, which is like they're worried, right? Like, what is this?
Whereas new information.
New information. Mm-hmm. I got to process it. And the other one is whatever. Yeah.
Huh. You know what? That kind of doesn't surprise me. I read a book about dogs once that said that dogs, like, you know, obviously experience the world through smell. And so they want to know where you've been and what you've done when you come home. And so the author of this book recommended that you breathe in your dog's face so that you can tell it, like, what you've eaten that day.
I had that experience just yesterday. I did. When I was over at my friend's house for the He-Man's Book Club for Real Men, he has a lovely dog, and the dog was there. It's very intrusive, but I love it. And we had something to eat, and sorry to say, I belched. And the dog was really interested.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like unusually interested. And I was like, all right, knock it off.
Yeah, no, every time I get home, I breathe in my dog's face. I have to, it's like a hello and welcome.
Oh,
you know?
Isn't that sweet?
Here's what I've done today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, it's like mm-hmm. a little newspaper report. It's like when they read the paper when they walk down the street, you know, like, mm-hmm. what's this? Oh, she's been here. Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm checking the mailbox.
Yeah,
over
yeah,
here. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Hey, the Pope was in the news this week.
You don't say.
Yeah. And not because he loves some sports team. No, he was talking about Pope Leo XIV was criticizing the surge of nationalistic political movements. Well, better late than never. Mm-hmm. The Pope celebrated a Sunday Mass in St. Peter's Square in front of tens of thousands of faithful, about as many people that called up about slim pickings, and asked the Holy Spirit to, quote, break down barriers and tear down the walls of indifference and hatred. Where there is love, there is no room for prejudice, for security zones separating us from neighbors, for the exclusionary mindset that tragically we are now seeing emerging also in political nationalism. Can't imagine what he's talking about there.
I don't know.
Crazy old guy.
Any other religion news?
Well, it depends on how you classify religion.
Okay.
I saw one here. A new study found that of over 47,000 women found that there was a positive link between caffeine and healthy aging.
Like too much aging?
No. If you have caffeine, it's actually good for you.
Oh.
This is why I said it's in the religion category. Uh-huh. So, you know, a lot of people drink coffee because they like the energy it provides. But there's a new study. This was done by the American Society for Nutrition. Pesky scientists have found that coffee may offer the much longer term benefit of healthy aging. So basically, they're saying that when you drink coffee, of course, you know, it sometimes wakes you up in the middle of the night, but it adds to a large body of evidence that links coffee to longer lives and various health advantages, including, you want to know what these are, lower risks of chronic diseases, like problems with your heart. In the study, researchers followed more than 47,000 female nurses. Now, if you know anything about nurses, they drink nurse coffee. Nurse coffee, and that is the hardcore. I've had nurse coffee, and I, you know, my heart was racing for 5 days. But it's they said that they've been following these nurses for several decades. This is a longitudinal study here, and every few years, the women were answered questions about their diets, including how much coffee, tea, and cola they drank. And then the scientists look at how many of the women were still alive and met their definition of healthy aging. So just over 3,700 women met the criterion. And the criterion is they were 70 or older, reported good physical and mental health, had no cognitive impairments or memory problems, and they were free of 11 chronic diseases, including cancer, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, kidney failure, Parkinson's, and multiple sclerosis. And they found a very strong, very tight positive correlation. Of course, there were other things. They couldn't smoke. They did need to exercise. But they did find that when you control for caffeine, apparently, that helps.
Well, that's interesting. Do you drink coffee?
I do.
Yeah.
Not a lot. About maybe a couple of cups a day. That's about
just
it.
Just a couple?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot for me because my thermostat's already high. I gotta watch out.
I get the jitters if I have too much coffee. My heart rate goes up.
Does it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like a little... But I do have to have coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To wake up or just to...
It's just part of the morning routine, you know?
Yeah.
It's a nice thing.
It is.
You got to have nice things.
That's the Mel and Floyd wisdom now. If you're keeping track, that's nice. That's lesson number 23.
Okay.
Would you like to know some more longevity habits? I got a whole bunch of these things. It turns out that if you exercise, that you could possibly help yourself with that colon cancer. You know, I'm mm-hmm. a stickler. I have semicolon mm-hmm. cancer. But anyway. But no, they said that if you get out and move around. See, you're not meant to sit on your posterior all day long and not move around. This is one of those things mm-hmm. that's just kind of part of what it is to be a human being. And they did this again, this big old study. And they looked at people at Canada, Australia, United Kingdom, Israel, United States, basically selected for kind of like, you know, the socioeconomic conditions and so on, among other things. And they said it's a really, really interesting study. They found that patients can increase their physical activity, can basically stave off, if there's a positive correlation between that and staving off colon cancer. So
okay, well, that's good news.
Yeah, so move around.
Move around, have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Moving around is always a good idea. I just think that's kind of what we were made to do. You know, walk around, look for mastodons, you know. I keep looking. Keeps me going.
Yeah.
Do you look for
mastodons?
No, do you have an exercise regimen?
I like to bike. I commute by bike, so I feel like that keeps me pretty active, you know, a couple times a week going to work on my bike.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's good to integrate. I mean, a lot of people make a big fuss. You know, they have like a gym membership or they do it. But it's really the best way to do it. I mean, through all human history, is just integrate it into your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I walk my dog twice a day and, you know, I listen to Wort on a podcast. You can too.
Hint, hint. Subtle.
Yeah. Do you?
Do we got to advertise any products now too? It's like an episode of the Goldbergs. And now for some Sanka. All right.
I don't know that either.
That's fine. You don't need to. That's before my time. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, but you ever watch old TV shows from early TV? Because they would just seamlessly integrate the advertising into the story.
Here's the
characters. Yeah, now let's talk about this. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I drove here in a Chrysler, you know, whatever. So we need to do more of that. I'm sorry.
Tesla.
I hate a Tesla. It's all computer. Yeah, right. I don't think we should. You know, here's the thing. Mm. That guy, he wants to be funny. Like, I have a friend who doesn't think he's funny. And I said, no, we don't think he's funny, but he's objectively funny to somebody. That guy. You know the one I mean. Yeah, the orange one.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like we're playing his game when we make fun of the things he says. Do you know what I mean? Because he wants to be outrageous and he wants to be the topic of conversation. As opposed to what are the things that are going on behind the scenes that are actually the real meat of what he is as a being, as a movement.
Well, this is something I've thought about. What is humor for conservatives? What is, you know, like when Trump was elected the first time, SNL became unfunny because it wasn't so much a parody of Donald Trump. He just was that guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. So I last summer when I went with the Wort News team to the RNC in Milwaukee.
Oh, you were there for that?
I was there for that.
Oh, cool.
And I ran across a table in the convention center where a group of, I guess Republican English majors had put together a collection of Donald Trump's poetry. They had gone to his Twitter account, downloaded his tweets, and arranged them into a poetry collection that resembled a book of conceptual poetry. And
so rather than haikus, they were lokus.
Lokus.
No
coos. Yeah,
no coos, thank you.
And I kick myself for not buying a copy because it would be this intersection of like the real and the surreal.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, wow. What were some of the things that happened when you were there, other than that? That sounds funny. I mean, I think that right-wing humor is somebody slips on the banana peel, and if they're handicapped, it's even better.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much as far as I can tell.
Right, the meaner the better.
Yeah.
I mean, people like mean.
Yeah, they do. They do, yeah.
Yeah. So we were there. We covered a lot of the protests, the counter protests to the RNC, how the convention was impacting local businesses. You know, Wort thrives in the realm of the local and the grassroots. And so that's what we did there. We worked with a local station and put on a 2-hour broadcast every night. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And we saw the people.
The people. let's see. Well, what's some other things that are going on here? Let me ask you this question. So here's another story. Have we talked about the benefits of coffee? Here's a question. This was from the New York Times, and it says, I've been trying to cut back on alcohol lately, but I do drink occasionally. Are any types of alcohol less risky than others? Now, this is something that's changed in my lifetime because I can remember 30 years ago people saying, oh, if you, you know, red wine is good for you and things like that. And now they're saying, all alcohol is bad, basically. Alcohol is alcohol. It's a deadly poison that your body has a very hard time processing. So what you really want is how little alcohol can you have in your alcoholic drink? And lots of things happen. I mean, the materials that get into your body when you drink alcohol can damage your DNA. They cause liver problems, but, you know, cancer of the throat, cancer of the colon, cancer of the breast. No amount of exercise is going to help you there. And the problem is that when the DNA gets repaired, cancerous mutations can arise. So that's part of the problem.
You know, the Surgeon General changed the warning on alcohol this last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. To say it was, you know, all alcohol is a cancer risk causing agent. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how that impacts people in Wisconsin.
What was it? Brandy. That was our, we lead the country in the per capita consumption of brandy, which I have a theory about that. We also are well known for our cannibals here. And I'm thinking that brandy is probably what does it. There's probably a taste that is left over in the meat after you've had that much brandy.
Maybe we can recruit some cats to help us do a study.
Cats would know. Yeah, we'd have to recruit them. You know, the funniest cat story I have is I once moved into an apartment here in Madison, and many years ago now when I was in grad school, and I moved into this apartment, and I walked in the door, and this cat rushed in after me. And it was so funny. It ran into the, it was an unfurnished apartment, so I hadn't moved my stuff in yet, but whoever had been there had moved all theirs out. The cat went running into the apartment. It ran into the kitchen. It looked around with this mystified, that's the only way you could describe it, look on its face, and then it looked at me and went, meow. And I thought, it's thinking to itself, okay, nothing's in here except for the can opener. So, you know, I'm fine. Fortunately, the guy, it was another college student, he came back a couple days later and said, have you seen my cat? Because she ran away when we were moving. Because they don't like that kind of stuff.
They get really
nervous. But I just thought it was so funny. She was fine as soon as she saw that I was there. The can opener was there. That's all she needed. So.
A crucial role to play.
Exactly.
Next to God, you know.
Hey, humpback whales can't see dangerous threats ahead of them. Do you know why?
No, I don't know.
Because they have tiny, tiny little eyes and they're way back in the middle of their bodies. Like, this is another one of these studies. Like, really? I mean, look at a whale. Why can't they see anything right in front of them? They barely see anything at all.
Who was the control group on this?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Things with eyes right in the front. Yeah, it's stereoscopic. You got to be kidding. No, this was a, and their eyes, apparently their eyes are pretty small. I don't know if you've ever seen a whale. I have never seen a whale like up close, but apparently their eyes are about the size of like a softball. I mean, they're just like,
relative to their.
Yeah. I mean, literally.
Oh.
I mean, that's how big their eye is. Mm-hmm. And their body is gigantic, right? So it's kind of weird to begin with. And they don't really use vision that much. Mm-hmm. They don't need to, and it probably wouldn't be helpful for them to use that. But it turns out that they have a hard time not running into things because there's this big black spot right in the middle. And they're like, oh, there's a diver over there. Oh, there's a diver over there. Oh, what's that in the front? No, I don't know. Not so much.
Well, we're getting down to it, science. Thank you.
They finally found, people have hypothesized that many of the dinosaurs living back in the good old dinosaur age were vegetarian, that they were plant eaters. Mm-hmm. But they've never actually, this is a hypothesis. They were never able to actually prove it with physiological evidence. Well, it turns out, yeah, I know. I wonder why too. But they actually have, this is the fun part. They actually found, they figured it's about 130 million years old, fossilized plants that had been in something's belly back in the day. I love it when scientists do this because, you know, they're trying to get into the news media, right? So this was actually in the journal Current Biology, and the person who did the study, Stephen Porapat, who's at the Western Australian Organic and Isotope Geochemistry Center at Curtis University in Perth. Yeah, I know. You should see the head of their stationery. It's very tiny letters. But he said that they found the smoking gun, or the steaming guts, as it were.
Steaming guts.
And it's actual direct evidence in the belly of a beast. So,
the belly of the beast full of veggies.
Full of veggies, yep, you bet. So your buddy's a Southern Baptist, and of you, what they did last week.
What did they do last week?
Well, they decided they're going to launch an effort to overturn same-sex marriage.
Oh.
Isn't that sweet?
You know, they...
So the funnest thing I've ever had with respect to this issue was once I went to a ball game over at the Herb Garden at the Kohl Center, and we were out there, and there was a guy, and he had a sign, and he said, "Marriage is between a man and a woman." And then he gave a biblical quote, I think was from Matthew. And I happen to know what that quote was. It was when Jesus said, "You can't get divorced." Yeah. And so I went over to him and I said, "Are you?" Because that's me. You know? Like, "Are you aware that that passage actually is we're talking about how you should never get divorced?" And he's like, "Really?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's what the main." I mean, they mention man and woman in the passage, which is why it's in there, right? But they're basically saying, divorce between a man and a woman is bad. So I mean, that's what the passage is about. And I said, "Do you think if people took that rule seriously, that there'd be many people at church?"
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
I mean, every church in the South would be empty. I mean, first there was Lurleen, then there was Susie Q, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, you're out. I'm sorry. Yeah. But you find something that's a minority interest, a minority taste, and you can go all in on being opposed to that. You know, whereas the only thing that Jesus actually said about sexual relationship that's actually supposedly in his words is, don't get a divorce. And back in the day, that was actually a pretty liberated position because it was very easy for a man to divorce his wife in ancient times. And the woman had no plan B because you can either starve as a widow or you can be a prostitute or whatever, but that's about it.
Right.
So he's like, don't do that.
Yeah. It's more about property relationships than it is about a sexual relationship.
Yeah. It's all about the goats.
The goats. You know, I feel like the Southern Baptists are going to toe this line that, you know, doesn't have any roots in actual biblical or theological text, but is all ideological.
I think there's so many. I always find fundamentalism interesting because having grown up in an area of the country that's very strongly fundamentalist, and in my family, where people say everything it's got to be found in the Bible, and you got to, that's where it all comes from. People had the oddest little practices, like sort of social practices, like the idea of like, well, I'm not sure what I'm going to do, so I'm going to open up the Bible, and whatever page it comes on, that'll be the message. Where in the Bible does it say to do that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, where exactly? Show me the passage. I remember my great grandmother once saying, "You're not allowed to have dogs inside." And I'm like, "Well, why not?" She says, "Well, it says so in the Bible." And I said, "Really? Where does it say that?" And she said, "I love it. Somewhere in the back." Okay, yeah, there's a "and by the way" section, we put all the miscellaneous stuff,
Appendix A.
Yeah, exactly.
Next to the semicolon.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my meemaw used to say, "I can't get my ears pierced because God didn't make me that way."
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. It's
literalisms.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that. I mean, you say, "Well, I shouldn't be wearing glasses, I suppose," or whatever. I mean, that's the devil's work too, because now you can read stuff. That would be bad. So yeah, there was a filing down. And speaking of religious things, there was a filing down in Little Rock. This was Pebble, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Seven Arkansas families filed a lawsuit this week because there's a new law that says that the Ten Commandments have to be posted in every public school classroom. And this was, of course, signed by Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And it's similar to a law that's also in Louisiana and in your
home
state
of Texas. Yeah.
So the Arkansas law takes effect in August and requires the Ten Commandments to be prominently displayed. And according to the lawsuit, permanently posting the Ten Commandments in every classroom and library unconstitutionally pressures students into religious observance, veneration, and so on. So,
there's that "thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife" command.
Or thy neighbor's wife's ass.
Yeah.
I mean, her donkey.
Yeah, there's a lot of "thou shalt not."
No, there are. There are 17. We talked about this before. Mm-hmm. There are 17 injunctions, and how you bunch them depends on what your religious affiliation is. Mm-hmm. So the Protestants do one way, Catholics do another, the Jews do another. So,
yeah.
So I don't know which version they're putting up. I'm sure that it never occurred to anybody that there were different versions. So we'll see what they do.
They're in the back.
Yeah, they're in the back. Yeah, exactly. Oh, let's let... Yeah, we have 1 minute. Okay, well, let me give you the last word. What would you like to say to the folks
Here you are. Here comes our buddy, the Jaguar.
Okay, we're going to hear some good music next. Hope to see you around at all the fun stuff happening this weekend.
That's very good. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I didn't know what to say, so that's lovely. All right.
And well wishes to Mel out there.
Yeah, everybody again, direct that energy towards Mel and some cash if you got any laying around. That would be fine, too. Thanks so much, and thank you, Saga, for being here. And this has been Mel and Floyd's Summer Replacement Show here on WRT 89.9 FM. And coming up is the Jaguar and then lots of other wonderful programming.
Let me hear you. Superman. One, two, three. Hot pants. Hey, hot pants. Hot pants. Smoking that hot pants. That bird is in. That bird is in. Take your minds up on. It looks much better time. My people keep going.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, June 13th.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1926. That was the day union leader Tony Mazzocchi was born. He's remembered as a longtime leader and international official with the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union. Mazzocchi was a prime force behind the passage of the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970. He was also centrally involved in the grievances Karen Silkwood brought against the Kerr-McGee Company. During the 1990s, he worked tirelessly to establish a labor party as an independent political force that could truly represent working people. Mazzocchi was born in Brooklyn, New York, to a union family. After fighting in World War II, he hired on at a cosmetics factory organized by the Gas Workers Union. He quickly emerged as a leader, fought for the rights of women workers, and soon became the president of his local. He would go on to aid in the merging of his union with the Oil Workers International that created OCAW. Within 10 years, he had become the International's Citizenship Legislative Director. Many have noted that Mazzocchi was one of the first labor leaders to build ties with the environmental movement. He linked the hazards in the workplace with hazards in the environment. He showed how workers and the public shared similar concerns about health and safety. He pioneered the Blue-Green Alliance that continues to advocate for green blue-collar jobs, build union reading clubs, and pushed his members toward social justice unionism. Mazzocchi was a coalition builder and worked with